Right, let's jump into it. Great. Put my glass here. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a real honor to be invited. Thank you very much to the organizers for the invitation. I've always wanted to come and talk in New Zealand about this subject. Over the years, it's been about the application of data analytics or data or models and things like that in agriculture. Everything's getting lumped into AI right now. It's all AI. And I'll touch on what we mean by AI in just a second. But wonderfully also, you know, for me early on, the distance was too far to just come for a talk and not have associated activities. But I think it's a sign of the times that it's been very easy this year to come over and speak to work with different businesses in New Zealand and research institutions and other institutions to really focus on what new can we do? What can we make real rather than us just talk about forever and ever and ever and have a nice conversation but never actually change anything. So the point, what I intend for in this talk is to give you some insights into the key areas where we're seeing agriculture now or into the coming years, up to 10 years into the future, I think was the initial ambition, AI having impact. And some of the things on there were actually already covered in sessions in the past few days. Some of them I was talking about even when I wasn't using the term AI several years ago. And that's the trouble about doing these sorts of forward-looking things is it dates very quickly. So I better get on with it before it's at a date, before the end of the talk. Thanks for the overview of my background. I mean, I've always been driven by having on-the-ground impact. So it was great to work in Kew Gardens, really taking the information from the experts and putting it into products that people can actually use. So customs officers being able to identify endangered species or actually getting to the bottom of doing a national survey of species to work out harvestable population levels and these sorts of things. But the analytics methods were often, we knew it could be improved. And with more data coming available, then I saw a way, kind of a real direction for impact is enabling people to get that extra value they can get by combining their knowledge and expertise with the data that's coming on board and not replacing the knowledge and expertise. And that's absolutely key. So the thing we were focusing on in research, I'll show you some examples of that a bit later, was really how you go about combining your domain understanding, predominantly expressed as models. So you know, you go to any agricultural institution and they'll dig out a model that they have of a crop, an animal, whatever it is. Sometimes I felt sorry for those people over the years and not really having the ability to scale them out because the domain knowledge is right, but the method of delivery in terms of how we work out how reliable that is and make it reliable so it works in lots of places, the technology for that in particular wasn't mature, but the technology has become mature and operationalizing a lot of these models it was a big focal area. So I'll show you some examples of that. And then now I had to get out of research basically in order to really focus on having real on the ground impact. So the last example there, experimenting with optimizing planting. I should explain these pictures actually. That's a whole bunch of models overlaid on the planet. That was when we were trying to model every biological system at planetary scales. That was at Microsoft Research. This was in Kew on the ground trying to work out sustainable harvesting practices for those snowdrop populations they are there. And then this was just about leaving and kind of leading to the job I do now, which is then, that was with an agricultural organization in the UK, forecasting their production, minimizing the difference between supply and demand, and working out things like whether we should really give up on that crop and plow it in because we're never going to have a market for it and these sorts of tricky decisions. And experimenting with optimization algorithms that would say, in order to best match supply and demand over the coming 3 months, you should start planting that there, that there, that there, this variety in this land area, and trying to get that recommendation done computationally. But it never, at any case, at any time, I don't think replacing a human with a computer. It was always augmenting the skills that the expert already had. So I thought it'd be useful to put up a definition of artificial intelligence, and my definition's changed over the years. To be honest, I more often speak to audiences where I have to define agriculture rather than artificial intelligence. So this is nice. It's nice to be that way around for a change. There's been a lot of popularity recently around artificial intelligence, particularly because of the stuff we've seen from deep learning. So Google's Go, artificial intelligence beating a grandmaster, and those kinds of things, and seeing examples of deep learning made models. But and for me, artificial intelligence was often that kind of super intelligence of computers, that ability to recognize faces and even do things that we can't do as individuals. I think that's too narrow, though. And actually, if you just go through the history books, do your homework, then artificial intelligence has been talked about for a long time. And I think the more useful definition is just simply where the machines provide that intelligent information. Doesn't matter so much how it's done. Is that intelligent? Is that useful for me? And there's an explosion in more useful, usable information from computational methods. But of course, that can then be delivered very simply. So the early days of artificial intelligence, the initial boom was in expert systems, which quite simply would be, here's a list of possible problems. Here's a list of possible answers that match those problems. You type in your problem. It looks up the list and gives you the most relevant answer. There's no great sophistication in the computation going on there. And that kind of capability is still being rolled out. And with advances in technology, it's increasingly easy to roll out that kind of capability. Farm advisors, or advisory systems augmenting farm advisors and the advice they can give and things like that is one example of it. But you can add more sophisticated methods on top that help communicate it in the right way, in the language of your choice, or even, you know, through a bunch of different ways in which you can communicate, you know, sound, vision, however, touch, smell. I don't know of any examples like that, but it's possible. But you see then that machine learning and deep learning are then subsets of that, with deep learning being a particularly popular emerging area of machine learning. But, you know, in terms of artificial intelligence in agriculture, I think it's worthwhile thinking about that more general area, because it focuses you on, you know, it kind of forces you to think on the scenario and the scenario of value realization rather than the scenario of where is a face recognition algorithm useful. I think it's better to focus on, well, what's the problem we're trying to solve? Hey, we could make that even better by employing this capability. And you'll know this, I'll skip through it, but obviously with the ubiquity of compute everywhere, so compute on our devices and sensors, on our desktop computers, and then increasingly in the cloud, then that's stimulating the ability to deploy some more smart systems on sensors and devices. There's been this term that's emerged called, you probably heard of intelligent cloud. It's where you've got AI running in the cloud and making recommendations. And there's this other term that's come up called intelligent edge, which is then the sensors and devices themselves are becoming increasingly intelligent. And I'll show you examples of that. But what is becoming clear is we're getting an intelligent fog, which is you've got compute all the way along. So in some cases, it makes sense to do compute on the moisture sensor meter in the farmhouse, or on the camera mounted in the barn looking at the animals. I'll show an example of that. Some cases, it might not make sense to send it to the cloud for various reasons, delays and costs, but you could send it to the farmhouse and have a hub in the farmhouse that's doing some of that compute. And in some cases, it goes out to the cloud. What's emerging right now is this connective tissue of compute that is supporting that better, more efficient use of data. From the compute, from the sensors and devices, we're getting the more data, and then we've got these refinements in AI algorithms to learn how to turn those into actual value as well. And that, there's a feedback cycle, you know, more applications of AI is driving organizations to put chips on devices and things like that so they can deploy AI, which is leading to, you know, the collection of more data, and so on. So yeah, it's absolutely exploding. And so we're seeing that explosion across in industries. And so, you know, why AI in ag? Well, there's a lot of emerging new AI capabilities that we could potentially utilize. Face recognition is everywhere, voice translation, these sorts of things. So, you know, we're seeing it in every other industry, which is fantastic. I just discovered 2 weeks ago this software company in the UK that develops supply chain solutions. And they're using our face recognition software for checking in and out seasonal employees, just recognizing them so they can just turn up and get to work. And it says, right, you're working now. And then, well, right, they've gone away. So it's nice when you just discover these kinds of advances. That's quite advanced AI in terms of face recognition and a very simple, fairly boring application, but particularly valuable. And then at the same time, so there's seeing that the AI algorithms are getting much more advanced on the one hand, and then you see that agricultural systems lending themselves particularly well to delivering intelligent information. The fact that people are working more remotely, the fact that they could benefit from being able to access relevant advice, that's fantastic. You know, there's the way in which you can augment their abilities with, you know, more advice, more experience. The fact that the systems themselves are remote and you can't be there every time to observe it. So, you know, fairly obvious rationales, which I'm sure you're aware of yourself. I think the thing to conclude from it, though, is that for me is in agriculture, and reports support this, that the gap between what is being used and the value you get by using more advanced capabilities is absolutely the largest. You know, the potential for getting value from being able to harvest data, utilize information from data more effectively is huge. And that's one reason why Microsoft and myself are really into it as well, is there's just so much value out there for all forms of computation in order to help get that intelligent information onto the ground in front of people. And the challenge is not, can the technology do it? The challenge is, how do I get value from that? What are the new business models, business cycles, ways of working and things like that that people can realize value from? And it doesn't have to be inventing fundamentally new business models. It might just be incrementally altering things like putting face recognition on supply chains, for example. So in the paper that I put together, and I appreciate the opportunity to put together this paper, talking about a lot of this stuff over the last few years, and it's all the content and things like that's existed in various slide decks and various, you know, blogs and things like that. And so it was nice to just have an opportunity to sit down and kind of systematize it a bit and bring it all together. So it's nice to have that now in the paper. And really thinking about these different areas of benefit in terms of when we're likely to see big impact from the application of different AI capabilities and the magnitude of that impact. So precision farm data at one end, precision, more precise views of where there are nutrient deficiencies or when whether the cow is about to go into oestrus or whatever it is, through to the more, you know, extreme ends. Robotics, of course, is one that we're very familiar with. So the point of the rest of this talk is really to go through that. But rather than a potpourri of examples, I thought I'd share some experience I've had over the last few years. And it's largely born out of working with organizations to help them get insights into how they can benefit from data. And it's turned into AI, really. And with that broader definition of AI, it's basically the same thing. But how you approach thinking, well, where would we start? And so I find this incredibly useful as one lens to look through. What could we do? You pick a scenario. How can we harness AI or harness data in order to get value? And so these are different forms of analytics in terms of analyzing information in order to get some intelligence from it, in order to get some insight. So descriptive analytics is just simply put in front of someone the data, and then they'll go, you know what, there's something going on there. So these can be your, you know, high resolution field maps. And then you're going, well, why the heck is there a giant green patch over there? Or it's, you know, it's turning out to be a latrine for our cows or whatever, something like that. You know, the classic is the stethoscope. classic descriptive analytics. All the doctor's doing is listening to your heart, boop, 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 boop. And then they're doing all the fancy analytics in their head, and they're saying, you're fine, or there's no heartbeat, you're dead, or whatever it is. And then, the next layer is then diagnostic analytics, which is then relating data to data. And from that, it's then, trying to draw some insight into why something's happening to allow you to make a more intelligent decision. So that would be like mapping your heartbeat to various properties of your activity and so on to work out whether, for example, that's somehow anomalous, that actually you tend to, your heart tends to be slow in increasing its rate when you do an exercise or whatever it is. So that's, looking at multiple data sets together. And then you move on to, so I think a key point from this is people often jump when they think about AI to the predictive and the prescriptive and think, well, can we predict that? Or can the computer just tell us everything we need to know? And if you haven't actually looked at any data or analyzed any data, that's not normally a good foundation. Sometimes you can do that. But if you're committing to actually being a more data-informed organization, data-informed agricultural organization, individual farm to, large cooperative or supply chain organization, whatever it is, then it's good for your health, your organizational health, if you're good at the descriptive and diagnostic too. It allows you to put faith in the more advanced predictive and prescriptive stuff as well. So predictive is fairly obvious that it predicts something and then you process that prediction. Do I believe it or not? I have, most of the farmers I work with in the UK have several weather apps on their phones and they're going, yeah, but do I believe the Met Office this week? Because they kind of haven't been all that good and these sorts of things. So there's still human intelligence in there. And then the last one, prescriptive. So the dream of, or nightmare of the computer saying, well, you should do this, you should do that. A simple example in healthcare, again, of prescriptive analytics is then the alarm going off when the heartbeat monitor is unplugged and it's just saying, yes, I will sound an alarm. And normally when it sounds the alarm, it's because, they've accidentally unplugged the patient. But and so there's normally lots of false positives, but you need to make sure that you spot those true positives. So, it's important there. So you're always thinking about the cost-benefit analysis for prescriptive analytics, but it goes in a loop. So prescriptive analytics now, you can train a computer to say, well, that's that particular individual, that's that particular cow, that's that particular field. It's saying, it's actually telling you kind of something. And it can say that, that's the decision you should make, for example, which can feed into descriptive and diagnostic analytics in order to improve things. Like all models, and this is just a conceptual model, it's wrong. I find it a useful device when you think about, well, how could we benefit from our data? Use that as one set of lenses you would use to go like, well, could we predict pasture growth? And say, well, how well do we even know the variation in pasture growth in particular area and what drives that and these sorts of things and taking a step back, but also seeing where you can take a step forward as well. Just I just threw this in at the last minute. These are screenshots from, I've got this cow tracker on my wrist called a Fitbit, which I'm using to monitor my activity. It's actually for a healthcare application for patients that need to do 3 hours. I've got cystic fibrosis patients need to monitor their health with lots of different devices. I don't have cystic fibrosis myself, but I'm trialing it out for a clinical evaluation. But it kind of signifies a bit of the descriptive, diagnostic, predictive, prescriptive spectrum. So initially in this case, then the clinician is, so first of all, the patient themselves are looking at their details and seeing how their health is changing. They want to preempt whether they're going to start to get sick and go to hospital early if they can. It's particularly important in cystic fibrosis. But vice versa, they actually want to minimize the chances of them going to hospital when they don't need to because there's a cross-infection problems as a result of that. So it's empowering them to see that. And so this would be, this is the area of application on farms is can we provide those meaningful dashboards that is allowing that more intelligent use of information. Enabling teamwork. So this is a one that we use, Teams, which then this is a mock-up. This is being used right this week in clinical evaluation, where then the clinician can collaborate with the patient, can collaborate with a nurse. So you can imagine like applications on farm farmer collaborating with the agronomist or farm advisor collaborating with someone else, probably not with a cow, in order to work out most effective decisions. Kind of like boring stuff in a sense, in terms of you're just doing normal communications, but, you know, facilitated electronically. But then the key thing is then I could click on that dashboard there that says Project Breathe, the yellow tab, and get to see all of that information in relation to the patient, providing that person's permitted us to share it with the clinician, or it was allowed the clinician to see it. And that's the harder problems to solve, is how we make sure that the originators of the data are receiving benefit, are fully in control of who's seeing what when, and am I getting enough benefit from it? So these are the types of business problems that we're trying to solve. So I think that at the basic end, you know, the more immediate emerging capabilities is just simply describing what's going on better. It's better sensors and devices in fields. It's rolling that in terms of the applications of AI, in particular, replacing some, you know, rough soil moisture estimate with some communication about what that's likely to be. There's a great talk yesterday for cows developing mastitis. And can we, with what confidence can we, rather than say cows up and down on that graph and, you know, the various health conditions on those graphs, just go probability mastitis on a single graph. Is that safe, reliable enough in order to use it in, for example, you know, these milking machines and so on? So we see a lot of these Fitbits on cows. I've got one on my dog now. But then one of the trends we're seeing is the development of general devices that can detect stuff, that you can put some AI behind it and it says, oh, that's not just stuff, that's a cow, for example. So, oh, I want to run. Did you see that video there? It did play. Did you see lots of cows? Yeah, so that's just a camera that has then been trained to identify a cow. And you'll notice an intruder came in as well. So rather than potentially having a device on every cow, for example, and tracking that one, well, can't we just mount cameras and it's say, look, that cow's clearly in distress. Basically, if a farmer can look and see that, then you can train an AI to report that as well. That's not replacing the farmer, that's just augmenting, giving the farmer superpowers to watch every cow on the farm all the time and make decisions. There's an example of a sophisticated development that we've been doing, getting computation out into the field. And this is farm beats, which I think you'll have seen before potentially. But the key thing here is that we can deploy software to an edge device, like a little box in the field, which can speak to a whole range of different sensors, dedicated sensors, drones, cameras, and then can speak to the cloud and can speak to the hub at the farmhouse. It doesn't have to be connected to the cloud. But then a key thing is that you can push to it, and that's like the edge CNN, for example. That's an edge convolutional neural network. So that's the algorithm that's detecting cows, for example, that you can push to that. So you don't need to have an internet connection to the cloud in order to have something that says cow, cow, or whatever. And then you can see some potential extensions of that we're looking at. I'll show you some soil moisture maps, for example, that we've done on the basis of farm beats. What's the play for us in this? Well, you know, in terms of us as a computer company enabling everyone on the planet to achieve more, there's a lot more enablement that can happen if we can push adaptable operating systems to these edge devices. And there are going to be far more computers out there that are doing smart stuff, that don't have a human in front of a computer screen, but are a remote place in order for you to put the computation and to harvest data. So that's a big area of growth for us. A big area of development is then sensing from remote. So I've already done kind of partially remote sensing in terms of cameras and farms and things like that, but then aerial imagery and turning them into information. That's an example actually of kind of AI building extra and valuable information onto the same data set. So 10 years ago, if you used satellite information, you'd be working with all these bands of waves and things like that. And it still is really horrible to process this data. Still is generally a problem. But slowly and surely, we're getting it so that you no longer have to look at a map and just see in terms of bands, but no, it's growing wheat here, and there's four cows there, and these are the field margins, and those field margins happen to be vegetation, or they happen to be fence posts. A big development by our AI for Earth team was really speeding up the process of doing that compute. So they did a land surface classification for the whole US at 30 meter resolution, I believe it was, once with their trained AI. They managed to classify every pixel. I believe it's a trillion pixels in 10 minutes at the cost of $48, $48 US dollars. Thanks. And there's an application to sustainability we did with Land O'Lakes, actually, where they're wanting to classify their field margins. These are publicly available examples you can go and see in terms of the sustainability benefits that are gotten by different land parcels throughout the landscape. This is combining in-field sensors then with aerial imagery. So to produce a high-resolution soil moisture map, without having tons of sensors in there, and actually without having any fancy wavelengths or wavebands. It's just, what's a snapshot? A farmer can look at that and go, if they've got experience, well, that bit is dry, given the vegetation and so on. So a neural network can do that too. I'll skip that one, you know, about the smart cow. And by the way, if you're looking at grants to support doing AI applications in agriculture, look up AI for Earth. And they have grants to support innovating new things that could be done. Rather than the problems, we can talk about the problems in the questions afterwards. There's some examples that you could ask me questions on, who does the interpretation and so on. I'm going to skip through this a bit faster. A big area is then beyond descriptive is then diagnostic. So supporting that understanding as to what might be going on from simple dashboards. And these are ones that I do with supply chain companies, connecting the information that's even on farm in terms of what pesticides were applied, what crops are grown, through to them, what products are linked to those farms. And that's a very evolving area. And you talk about in New Zealand being able to provide more meaningful information for the premium produce being sold to particular markets, then this is the sort of evidence base that you need in order to have that on a good foundation rather than greenwashing. So I'm doing a lot of that. In the coffee, I was speaking a bit about them. How can we use ML AI for more advanced diagnostics? We've got some examples coming out of our labs of then given the complex cell processes that are going on all this gene expression data, inferring what the probable biological processes were that were going on in this cell. Now it's consistent with that gene expression data when you're talking about, many thousands of signals. This was my speciality, was operational forecasting of different biological systems, disease spread, carbon dynamics, and ocean productivity in those cases. Let's see if the computer can handle that. This is then rolling them out at a global scale. What we got to the bottom of is, well, how do you operationalize these models so that you can trust their predictions? And how do you track for whether they're drifting over time? Because all models are wrong, and they will always tend to drift, especially in complex systems such as agricultural systems. So a lot of the consulting I then do in biological applications is how you set up systems such that you can make sure that it has a particular degree of reliability. In those cases, the code is about that big in terms of for the model itself, and then all the other bits you need in order to track accuracy and make sure people's data is protected is just so much bigger. So the prediction's the easy part. We applied that in, this is an example from applying it for lettuce production in the UK, where we're predicting sort of no y-axis, but it's time to maturity over the year, forecasting that with uncertainty. They'd been forecasting for 20 years, and we applied some more advanced nonlinear machine learning methods and managed to quite easily beat their forecast models for when the crops would be ready. And that's been applied in India in particular for advising Indian farmers on when they should be sowing their crops so as to maximize their yield, particularly getting the right timing for taking into account when the monsoon rains will arrive. And that's been rolled out for about 5 staple crops now. On average, they improve their yields by 20 to 30%. It's nice to see applications at this end of the world as well. This is from The Yield, and them rolling out a combination of predictive models and in-farm sensors and advisory software for farmers. The thing that's really impressed me about them is their commitment to absolutely validating that this is exactly what the people who are their users absolutely need. They're too much fails with, we'll build it and they will come. We'll do an attractive website. It's just never going to work. You know, you've got to be in there changing, making sure you are actually seeing how these things are being used. And I see then the role, you may potentially have no fancy software at the user interface end, but just simply get the farm advisor to understand how to use this information and communicate. That educate the people that are advising as to, well, how to effectively use this information. And then from that, if there's enough cases, then build something that makes it a bit easier. We're seeing some moves towards farm recommendation systems, benchmarking and so on. It's fairly obvious in terms of, you know, seeing the things like for the Indian application, it was what your yields are likely to be in relation to the days and when you sow, and it would recommend, well, we recommend that you sow now. Which I had to pay the farmers to take the advice initially. So they got two payments. They got a 20 to 30% yield increase, and they've got the bribe to use the system because I want to see if this is going to work. I think a really cool area of prediction recommendation is in active learning, is in identifying, yeah, but how much do we need to measure? You know, we sensors are expensive, and so you worry about, well, how many we're going to need. But if you have a method by which you can quantify how much value you're getting from more sensors in the field, then you can get the optimal amount of sampling. One example of that was with farm beats, actually. This is the correlation between the field measurement and what farm beats inferred. But what from that they realized was that they didn't need to sample the fields anymore. They could get a really precise estimation, minimal amount of sampling required for the landscape in order to come up with the most accurate estimate. I'm going to skip over farm robots. There's a lot talked about. It's, you know, fascinating. It's a really valuable and growing area. And we are being involved in that in terms of how a robot is an edge device. It's growing quite a lot in the UK in terms of the implementation of farm robotics. And in the review process, I had a brilliant recommendation to look at the studies of the impact of farm machine and milking machines in New Zealand and Australia. And there was an example here as well in terms of studies of what the overall impact is of using the technology. And we need far more like that, and summarizing the costs and benefits. And it was nice to see that it was net positive. It won't always be that case, but that's the sort of research we need a heck of a lot more of in order to really understand if these things can be used reliably, safely. This is what I'm mostly talking about while I'm over in New Zealand, is that digital traceability. I see this as a key way to unlock a lot of the value of this ability to prove sustainability, prove the greenness of produce and things like that, is being able to relate it right the way through to the end consumer. So we can do that. Computationally, we can do that. Not necessarily not at all just Microsoft competitors as well, but also a partner community specializing in doing traceability solutions for particular brand lines, particular industries, and so on. Transparency One, for example, in the bottom right is an example of a company that does traceability as a service. The right-hand side there, I'm confusing my left and right. That one's Transparency One. That one's doing supply chain traceability that we built. In 2 months for a spice company, connecting a company that grows spices in India, that sells curry in the UK, the advisory company that has an insight over it, and tracing all the stages of the products, including the sustainability assessments, the tests for fungal pathogens and all these sorts of things. And it's about ways in which you can facilitate the navigation of that information in order for you to extract a useful bit of information. This is going to emerge as we have more data, more models, more everything, digital information relating to the thing. Great, I'm just finishing now. So you know, you get to the problem for, like, if you take your cow with its Fitbit and it's being observed and things like that, that you don't want to be in the situation where I've got, well, there's these 50 information sources and I want to find out X. That's a nightmare. Digital twin is the paradigm that emerges from that, which is saying, look, this, I am your portal to the cow. Tell me what you want to know. And if you're asking for historical data, it'll dig that out, the historical data banks. If you want the 2 week, the month long prediction of mastitis probability, it'll give you that. You need new algorithms that find out for you what the information source is that's relevant to your question. And that's emerging because of, there's just so much data and models and things like that out there. We need these aids. And that's it. So as a real whistle-stop tour of different areas of application, we're getting involved in them as well. I think a conclusion from looking at that splurge of opportunity is the more valuable ones are when we start combining multiple technologies, combining multiple implementations of types of AI as well. So to do digital traceability, you benefit by being able to predict risk and things like that along the supply chain, plus that visual ability to see what's going on, plus the ability to like work out what it is someone's wanting. But a key thing is not to think, well, if I can't do that, I can't do anything. But you get there through these various, you know, value returning steps. And, you know, by getting started now on some trials of how you get value from data, that's the way forward. And for those entering into this industry, that's where there's just an enormous world of opportunity, whether you want to start up a new business, have an impact on an existing company. The data augmented world, which is now through AI, is what's happening. And so getting in there now is going to be a good idea, I think. Thank you very much.